Identification. This will be an interview with Terry Carter. It's MP SM5 Side A. The interviewer is Siobhan McHugh, and it's the 13th of July 2005. And the strange sort of vibrations in the background on the tape we think are coming from the cargo ships just below us. I can't actually get rid of it off the tape, so just to clarify what that is. End of ID. Okay, Terry. So maybe we could start, if you could run through for me again what your family history is here at Miller's Point, where it starts.
Right. We moved into the area in 1961, my grandmother and her husband, her third husband, William O'Connor, my grandmother's name's Dorothy, they purchased the landlord rights to a property in Lower Fort Street, number 19, and they paid goodwill money, and that gave them the opportunity of being landlord of that particular residential.
What is goodwill money?
Goodwill is when you're not actually buying the property, you're buying the goodwill of the business. So it was set up as a residential property, letting out the rooms. And so any money earned was theirs. So the lady that was there before, she wanted to leave, so she sold the goodwill of the place, which was basically the running of the house. The house at the time was owned by the Maritime Services Board and was later handed over to the Department of Housing.
So she started in Fort Street, in Lower Fort Street.
Yes.
And how many children were there in that family?
It was just my grandmother and her husband and her son by her second marriage, John. They moved in, and then she invited my mother and myself to move in with them. My mother was her daughter-in-law, so it was her other son, Ken, who wasn't living there. That was my father.
So describe your mother and father then, and what they did.
My mother and father separated when I was four, and we lived over at Neutral Bay and then at North Sydney, which was a family base. My great-grandmother lived at North Sydney at that time. They'd come down from the country, I think before the Depression. And they lived over there for a long while, and so when my parents separated as a baby, we were at Burwood, and then Mum left and went to Neutral Bay. And then when they had to sell up, they didn't own that place, they had to leave the place at North Sydney that was being rented, because I was putting the expressway through that was leading to the Harbour Bridge. And so when my great-grandmother had to leave, my grandmother purchased the goodwill of 19 Lower Fort Street. And when she moved in there, she invited my mother and I, who were living in a very small house, renting a very small house in North Sydney, would we like to go there, because we didn't have much where we were living. And
that was fairly generous of her, wasn't it? It's unusual.
Oh, she's a wonderful woman. Yeah, she's she just saw that my mother was struggling, and she cared about both of us. And my father wasn't a very good provider. Well, he didn't provide anything. You know, he's an interesting character who sort of lived a pretty exciting life, and we were the contrast to that. We were the sort of stable, boring, I suppose, to a lot of people. But you know, he sort of left this world that we were in to pursue a more exciting
What sort business. Of work was he in?
He was often involved in advertising and sales, and you know, small business ventures and things like that. Nothing ever sort of that I could. He was involved at one stage with health clubs. I don't know that he ever had a stable occupation. He was, you know, just moving from one thing to another, and it just depended on what mate had what going at what particular time. So he just sort of went with the flow, but he mixed with some very interesting people throughout his life, and people loved to have him around. He was a great storyteller.
I just thought I read that he was at sea, that he worked on the ships. I thought that was part of his background.
No, he's... No, he didn't work on... I didn't actually mention that he was on a yacht at one stage. He was shipwrecked, but, you know, he wasn't at sea.
Okay, so when...
could have been.
Sorry, that's obviously my confusion. So when your mother was living here with you as a young child, did she work to support you?
Yes, she worked basically from when we left out. She had to work 6 days a week to provide for us because there were no benefits back then. So, you know, if you had a child, you had to work.
So what did she do?
Well, she worked as a barmaid originally over at the North Star at North Sydney. As the years went by, she had various jobs, but, you know, she used to stay in places for years at a time. When I was a bit older, she worked downtown in the theatres, cinemas rather. And then after that, she was at the Masonic Club doing catering there. So she had quite a few jobs. Apparently, when she was younger, she was an usherette in the theatres, and that was apparently equivalent to doing modelling. Back in those days, they had to be very beautifully groomed and quite gorgeous, actually.
So when she was working, did your grandmother provide the care for you after school? Mm.
Yes, once we moved in here, I used to come home and Nana would be there all the time. I mean, Nana and Bill were my stable, everyday family that I interacted with, and Johnny was there. He was working or either at TAFE when he was a bit younger. He wasn't there a lot as he got older. He used to sort of take himself off and out.
Was Johnny your uncle?
Yes.
And Bill was another uncle?
Well, Bill was my grandmother's third husband, but I used to call him Uncle Bill. Never called him grandfather or anything, but he was my grandfather in every way. So,
was that a strange thing for your grandmother to have married three times?
Well, it didn't seem strange to me because that was just a matter of fact that, you know, she'd been married three times, but she had some funny opinions. I mean, their relationship was quite hilarious, the way they used to interact. I mean, he'd tease her a little and she'd sort of retort back and put him in his place all the time, and he'd giggle. He'd walk away giggling, thinking it was really funny that he managed to get a bit of a rise out of her. She had fairly... unhappy background with the men that she'd been involved with. I think her first husband, which was my father's father, he more or less abandoned her when my father was young, and that was up in Narrabri. And then she came down to the city because her mother had already come down here, so she came down with my father when they were young. And then she later married another man, Ken, and that was a very unhappy relationship. My father has very angry memories of him, and because he was a very difficult man to be around. He was a very cruel man, and fortunately my grandmother eventually left him and married Bill, and Bill was a jolly, terrific person. But he was very colourful too. He'd always get thrown out of the pubs around here for having one too many and picking fights. And, you know, it was not unusual for him to be thrown out of a place because he was brawling. He just seemed to roll from one pub to the next to find someone to sort of get into this fight up with. So you know, he was a character. And, I mean, I remember once coming around the corner, I borrowed his car, and My first child was only young, and she was in the baby seat at the back, and I came around the corner and I thought, oh, there's two silly men rolling around in front of the pub, and those silly things. And next minute I spotted one was Bill. So I got really upset and I'm sort of dancing around going, stop it, you two. And he sort of looked at me with this sort of a drunken, stupid look and sort of threw his coat towards me. And so I ran over to Nana, yelling out, Nana, Nana, Bill's in a fight over the hotel. She said, oh, damn right serves him to, you know, wets for getting involved in anything like that. She couldn't have cared less.
Which hotel was it?
The Harbour View in Lower Foot Street.
And were there a lot of fights, do you think? Was that at the time of the 6 o'clock closing?
would have been. I mean, the thing about drinking back in those days is it just didn't have the same stigma attached to it. And I mean, people would come out blind drunk and get in their cars. And we used to go on holidays. And I remember when Bill would drive, our whole trip would be punctuated by hotel stops where Nana and I'd have to stay in the car with a lemonade while he'd be having a quick beer, and then we'd be on our way again till the next pit stop. I remember the brawling that was involved with him because it was, you know, relative to us. I mean, I was probably quite sheltered from most things and unaware, but I mean, I knew that he had a temper that came out through drinking, and he was one of these people who became, you know, quite angry when he was drunk, but he was never abusive to us, so I never sort of saw a bad side, but I knew to stay away from him when he was, I could see it in his eyes, so you just sort of give him a clear berth.
Well, describe, can you, Terry, the house at Lower Fourth Street?
Yeah, I was very excited when we first went there because my experience with my mother prior to that had always been sort of a small room somewhere or a small house or whatever. But for me being, because I was only six at the time when we moved in there, that house to me seemed huge. And so when we walked in and there wasn't, you know, very much furniture around, and I can remember sort of running right up the top and then running right down to the bottom to the basement, and I was really struck by the bells that were sort of lined up on the top of the wall once you sort of got down the bottom. And I can remember, I think it was Nana who actually said to me that they were the servants' bells. And that fascinated me because I'd never sort of been exposed to anything about servants and things like that before. So it sort of got me thinking a bit about, oh, how fascinating that was. And So I explored that house upside down, inside out. It was a fascinating house. And
so were there three levels then?
You had the ground level, and then you had the basement, and the basement led straight out to the backyard. And then you had the first floor, and then the top floor. So, I mean, it's really not that high, but it seemed like it to me, being six, that it was this huge house. And our rooms were upstairs, right on the very top level. I remember Nana and Bill had one room, Johnny had the other, and Mum and I had the back room. And I did something really foolish one day, because, I mean, my mother was one of these mothers who just, if she's around you, she doesn't take her eyes off you. You know, that's her way of caring for children. You just don't take your eyes off them. But, I mean, she never knew, but she would have been hysterical if she'd known that I dropped a hairbrush out the window and it slid right down into the guttering. And I was terrified that I was going to get into trouble. And to get out there, I actually had to climb over three bars that were across the window. So I had to squeeze over the top one and to get onto the roof. And I sort of slid down there. And as on my way back, I had a bit of a panic attack. I remember sort of thinking I couldn't get back there. And so I've still got a very vivid memory of the fear of not being able to move. And then eventually getting back there and thinking to myself what a dumb thing it was to do, and that, you know, I shouldn't have done that, and why was it so important that I get the brush? But I sort of promised myself I'd never ever get out there again. I scared myself so much. And now looking back and knowing how high that was and the potential for disaster, I just sort of think, oh, what a stupid thing to do. But
Well, just staying with the house for the moment, can you take me through the rooms? It sounds like there were three bedrooms on the top floor, but just maybe from the front door when you walked in.
Well, when you walk in, you're in a hallway, and there's an immediate room to the left. And then you walk, as you look ahead, you'd be walking straight up the first lot of stairs. But there's also a continuing hallway to the left. So it's sort of... It branches off so that you sort of have part of a hallway to the left, which leads to another room, and then to the downstairs that take you down to the basement. If you go up the stairs, you then have to turn left and left again because that folds back on itself to go up the next lot of stairs, which leads you to the first level. And as you get to that landing, you have a room on your right which looks out towards the back. And then you walk straight ahead to the room that leads you to what we used as our lounge room, which was a large room that had the veranda attached to it. And it's from that veranda you could look out and see the opera house. So, and then if you continued up the stairs that wound up again. It'd sort of go back up the stairs and then it folded back again on itself and up to the top landing. That's when you'd be up to where the three bedrooms were.
So what kind of things lived around you in that street?
We actually had a Lebanese family that lived next door to us that were and are still related to the Lebanese shopkeepers in Lower Fort Street. We never had much to do with them. We were friendly, but my family kept very much to itself. I think because in a lot of ways we were newcomers. And while there was a politeness that I remember my grandmother sort of was very polite to people and would stop and have polite chat, but she was never close friends with anybody that I remember. We never had visitors come into the house other than family, despite the fact that the rooms were rented out to people that weren't family. There was still not a closeness. There was always a distance.
So roughly when had your grandmother moved into the area?
It was 1961, beginning of 1961 they moved in.
So that would be a different, you'd be blow-ins compared to the people who've been there for three or four
absolutely.
Generations.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think that's something that pleased me in certain ways, because I didn't feel like I fit in terribly well with the other kids in the area. I did develop close relationships with one girl in particular, but being the outsider sort of gave me a bit of a different perspective. I could see that there was a bigger world out there than Millers Point, whereas I felt that this was a very insulated area, that it seemed to fold back in on itself. People didn't aspire to much other than getting a job, and I think that was a good thing that I had come from outside the area, because I tended to look outside the area as I grew up and established friendships within and outside of the area.
That's interesting though, because you've chosen to stay in the area.
I actually love the area, but then I have benefited by being a part of the area in terms of being able to sort of achieve the accommodation that I have here. It was originally Maritime Services Board and we lived in number 19. Then my mother moved with myself into number 25, a friend of hers at the time. He purchased the goodwill of number 25, which is also a residential, and we had our own room there. And then not too long after that, a couple of years later, my mother was given her own place in Lower Fort Street, so we moved again. and so I think it was for something hideous like $6 a week, and we had our own place for $6 a week. I can remember that was sort of like a really big deal. It was the first time I actually had what you would call a proper room, which was mine. Prior to that, I did have my own room when Mum and I moved into number 25, but it was a veranda room, which didn't really give me the privacy of having your own room, which is what we had when I moved into 34A Lower Fort Street. And that was sort of, Mum was excited because that was our own little place. Prior to that, you know, we did just have a room in both the places that we were prior to that. So it was a big deal for Mum.
And then you moved to Dalgetty, didn't you?
I moved to Dalgetty when my daughter was born. I did a fair amount of teenage running around, and sort of I stayed in Perth for about 4 months, and I'd rented out with girlfriends at various places around Sydney. I think we were at Annandale and Glebe, but you know, always seemed to come back home. But when I was pregnant with my daughter, I was already living back at home, and I wasn't quite sure what I was going to do, so I went to New Zealand to think about things and sort myself out and work out how I was going to handle what was going to take place. And I was a bit of a mess emotionally, so I needed some time away, and so I went to New Zealand, and I was quite happy there and decided that I'd stay there for the birth. And I was so happy there that I was actually considering staying there. But Mum came over, as she intended to, for the birth. And when she got over, she was really excited to tell me that she'd had the place carpeted and bought a colour TV and, you know, everything in preparation for the baby. And so I didn't have the heart to say I'm not coming back, so I just came back with her because I figured, well, you know, that's what she made her happy. So, and she wanted to be a part of her granddaughter's life, so we came back when my daughter was 10 days old. So we lived around at 34A, and then I applied immediately for my own place, and shock and horror, 4 months later I had it. It was sort of, I got such a surprise that I got a place so quickly, and that was around flat 3, number 9 Dalgetty Road. And we were there for 5 years before a place in Merriman Street that was vacant sort of took my eye. And then I applied for number 30. And I can remember the it was still under Maritime Services Board then, and the fellow who was in charge of renting out the places took me to number 30 Merriman Street, and he just couldn't believe anyone would want to live there. He just said, I'll show you, but you know, you're probably not going to be interested. And I was walking going, oh, it's gorgeous, oh look, you know, and the toilet was out the back. Oh, the toilet's out the back, oh that's great. I was so excited about it. He's going, it's awful. And I'm saying, no, it's beautiful, you just can't see it, you know. And so he said, so you really do want to rent this place? And I said, yes. So I took over number 30 Merriman Street, and I was there until it became considered sort of unacceptable as far as department housing requirements went. Like the toilet was outside and they wanted to renovate it. And I took the advice of a lady around here who was known as Auntie Faye. She's still here. She said, you know, you want to pick the house you want while you've got the opportunity, because you know, otherwise you'll be forced to do something you won't want to do, or forced to move somewhere you don't want to be. So pick your place and apply for it. So when this place was number 36 here was being renovated, I applied as the minute I saw that the workers in here.
Yes. So was there a stigma attached to being in Miller's Point at that time, or was it the house itself that he was aghast at, the Maritime Services?
Oh, no, I just think it's because the living conditions were fairly primitive. We, you know, until the Department of Housing took over, people supplied their own heating systems in terms of hot water systems. They didn't, you know, they'd come along and paint if you nagged them, or fix something that was wrong if you nagged them to death and waited for 2 or 3 years. But most people just fixed whatever they wanted to themselves. So, you know, they'd get frustrated waiting, so they'd just get things done themselves if they could afford to. Otherwise, you know, you had to wait till they got to you. But they weren't really, they weren't hell-bent on getting stuck into doing the things that needed to be done. Places wore out and wore down and looked dilapidated half the time, and toilets were outside, and sometimes showers and things like that around in Lower Fort Street. Both the places that we lived in, the residentials, my grandmother's place, they had the toilet and bathroom inside, but when we moved to number 25 we had to actually go out to the out shed to have a shower, and also the toilet was downstairs out the back.
Was it covered over when you were walking out?
No. You had to pass through the yard to get to the out shed.
When you say residential, what's the difference? Is the opposite of residential a boarding house or something?
I just know it as being referred to as residentials, as in us. Well, they're sort of large residences, I suppose. They're like really large terrace houses. That's my impression of them, only because they've been termed as residentials.
Having lived in the different streets in Miller's Point, even though it's within a very small area, have you noticed any difference in the sense of street life or community or anything in Merriman versus Dalgetty versus Fort Street?
Well, since I do, because I think part of it has to do with who I am as a person and the age that I have been at each sort of point of the street. So when I was a child, I was in Lower Fort Street. When I was a teenager in Lower Fort Street, I used to leave the area a lot. I didn't have a lot to do. You know, to me it was, I'd spent my childhood here and I want to get out, you know, just want to be somewhere else. I've always loved the actual area, but I didn't intend to be here. It was just probably my good fortune that sort of kept me here, and that I got these places, you know. And I mean, this is a beautiful place, and I thought number 30 was beautiful, and I mean, it wasn't renovated like this place, but I just saw the beauty in it. It was the first place I felt like was a home for me. I know Mum felt like she'd found home in number 34A, and I suppose to a certain degree I shared her enthusiasm at the time, but number 30 was my first home, that felt like a real home for me, where I could make my, you know, my family feel like this was our family home. And that sort of continued on in this place, but number 30 was very relevant to my children when they were young. And this street, when my children were young, had a great sense of community, because I had two really close friends in this street, and they still live here in this street, but we're going to be interrupted.
OK, we'll stop for a second. We'll come back to that, how the streets are for and were for your children growing up. Just maybe going back to your childhood, what kind of games did you play? Where did you play? What did you do as a child?
As a child, I remember spending a lot of time in the park across the road in Dawes Point Park. I was up the trees, and I was up the trees. I used to sit up the tree, and there's one tree that's near the bus stop at the George Street North there, just right on the park, and I can remember being up that tree. That was my favourite tree to sit up, because no one would know I was there, and I'd watch people come and go, and, you know, it used to amuse me that I'd be up there. And I had a rich fantasy life because of being an only child, and there were no children who were immediately close to me that I could develop any sort of play relationships with. So I spent a lot of time on my own. And so, you know, I'd be up the tree thinking I was in Africa somewhere, or, you know, be down the park. I'd try and throw the ball against the pylons, but they've got very uneven surface, except for there's a middle section there that if you could hit the ball into there, you could play ball there. But most of the time it was sort of a bit of a waste of time. I remember drawing hopscotches a few times, and I think at one stage I had a ball in stockings where they used to flick it either side on the wall and lift your leg and flick it under there. So there was that was sort of a game for a while. I wandered about the area a lot. I mean, I used to wander up and down the laneways, and I was sort of, you know, a very curious child. All around the wharves, there were lots of sailors from different countries, because all along here, the Walsh Bay wharves used to be the normal stop for all the overseas shipping, so you'd get sailors of, you know, from all countries wandering through.
And you didn't, your mother didn't warn you not to do that kind of thing?
Oh, of course. No, I was warned to not do a lot of things, but I guess, you know, you swear blind that you're trustworthy, and, you know, I won't get up to any mischief. I'm just going to Vicky's house, and, you know, off you go. And then you'd go to Vicky's house and you'd say, well, we're just going off to Terry's. And we had them bamboozled half the time. We were all over. We'd go to each other's house, might call in, you know, five times, six times in a day of wandering back and forth, just because we were bored to death and couldn't think of much else to do, so we'd just wander from house to house.
Did you have any conversations with the sailors?
Oh, no. No, just aware that they were around, that's all. My room at Nana's, our first room, overlooked the back area where the ships came in, so, you know, I'm a mad window sitter. If there's a window available somewhere, I sit there and watch what's going on. So, particularly when I was younger, I used to spend a lot of time with my head out the window, you know, just observing what was going on. It was probably my greatest form of entertainment. That's probably why I formed such a strong impulse to do that.
I'll just take this opportunity, sorry, Terry, to put an ID on the tape. Just one sec. This is the end of Side A, MPSM5. Beginning of MPSM5, Side B. So staying with your childhood, Terry, I believe you used to climb the pylons on the bridge.
Oh, yes. The pylon lookout was open, and you could actually access it from right at the base of the pylon. There was a stairway that we would work our way up, you know, climbing stairway after stairway to get to the top. That was just something else we'd do if we were bored. We'd just find our way up there, or we'd walk along the bridge, or we'd go up to where the trains came through the tunnel on this side and just wait for the trains to come through and watch them. And, you know, we just sort of tried to amuse ourselves any way we could. There wasn't a lot to do. There was actually the King George Playground, but I was never comfortable where the kids from this area used to congregate en masse. So I never felt comfortable to sort of socialise to any great extent with them.
Was that because they were a bit rough?
There was a very rough element that I was a very timid child. I think if I'd been a gutsier child, I probably would have not thought twice about it. But because I was so timid, I was scared of them. So, you know, I gave them a fairly wide berth and, you know, avoided any situation where I knew that I'd have to be in contact with them.
Where did you go to school?
I went to school over at North Sydney. A few of the kids went from here, and that's where the girl that I became closest to in the area, Vicky Bradford, that's where she went to school as well. So our relationship was able to sort of develop, I think, because we were at school together, which meant we travelled together and came home and knew what homework each one had to do. And so it sort of kept a companionship that otherwise may not have been maintained.
And was there a reason why you didn't go to either Fort Street or St Bridget's, the local primary schools?
Well, I wouldn't have gone to... St Bridget's only went to second class, and so by the time I moved here, I was in first class. Yeah, so St Bridget's went to second class, and I was over at St Francis Xavier at Lavender Bay. And that... I was happy there. The interesting thing was I was at Neutral Bay Public. My mother put me in there when I was 4.5 years old, and I think she bumped up my age and said I was 5 when I was actually 4.5. And I was miserable. I was so miserable there. And she kept telling me that things would be better if I went to the Catholic school, that, you know, they'd be kinder and they'd be nicer and I'd have friends there and all this sort of thing. And I never had any friends at all while I was at Neutral Bay. And quite humorously, once I started at St Francis Xavier, everything she said was true. I think because the kids were indoctrinated by the nuns to, you know, be generous of spirit, and that they were monitored so closely about what that meant, that they actually were more caring and more inclusive of me, and I wasn't able to be left out of anything because there was a concerted effort made to, you know, keep Terry company, and, you know, she's new here and all this sort of thing. So I developed this great love of the school and the whole thing, and I was really happy there. So I don't think Mum would have... Well, there was no reason to, because, as I say, St Bridget's would have been the only alternative, and that only went to second class. So Lavender Bay went up to sixth class, so I stayed there.
Did you get the ferry over?
No, we used to catch the train, and we're really... I was particularly naughty. I don't remember Vicky being naughty, but I was just terrible. I used to hang out of that train and sort of pull myself back in as soon as we'd reach, you know, you'd be flying along at speed and you'd see the big pylons, the big steel beams that you'd be coming up, and you'd pull back in. So you... And, you know, I just... Because at those stages, the doors weren't automatically closed, that, and you could have them open. So, you know, you were able to hang onto the rail and hang out the doors. I used to do this all the time. And, I mean, just some of the things that I used to do, I just think, oh, I cringe. Mum would have been beside herself if she'd seen me. So, yeah, we used to catch the train. We never caught the ferry because the ferry really wasn't close to the school, whereas the train station is right behind Lavender Bay, right behind the school where I was, St Francis there.
And then for high school, where did you go?
Oh, by the way, Fort Street Public, that terrified me. I mean, all the kids that I was scared of went to Fort Street. I mean, the thought of going there would have sent me into a state of panic. But high school, there was Fort Street High as well, and that was never an option because it wasn't Catholic. The local Catholic school was at Church Hill, which is just in town there, St Patrick's. And so it was just assumed that that's where I would go. That's where the kids in the area that were Catholic went. And that's where I was booked in to go, and I absolutely hated it. Hated it most of my school life. The nuns were awful. They were just horrible. So I don't have very good memories of my high school. It was like being in jail.
But there wasn't any way you could change and go somewhere else?
It just sort of didn't happen like that in my days or in my family. It was just sort of like you just went with what you had, and there was never any talk of... If you hated school, that's like, oh, well, everyone hates school. You know, no, it didn't ever mean that anything was ever going to be done about it. it's not like today. Everybody panics if your child says they're unhappy. Everybody swoops on them and, you know, what's wrong? And, you know, they might need counselling and, you know, is this person treating them right? What's a teacher up to? There was never any of that. There was just an implicit trust in nuns and you got whatever education was available and you'd be grateful for it. That was the attitude. So no one ever sort of thought about pulling you out, didn't matter what you went through.
Just going back to your childhood and sitting in the tree, I think you remember seeing the opera house being built.
Yes. Well, we used to sort of... We had a sort of an ongoing view of the whole process of building the opera house. It was, you know, quite a fascinating event. I remember when it was flat before they had any of it there. So, you know, it was... Quite a deal to watch that go up, and it was an even bigger deal when it finally was finished. It was sort of like, oh, finally, you know, we don't have the cranes and everything over there. It was just finally this beautiful building. So, I mean, my eyes were on the harbour all the time. I used to watch the Oriana come in and the Canberra and pine to leave with them. I'd love to have sailed off through the heads. You know, it always seemed like such an exciting thing to go on a ship to leave the country. And it always seems like such an exciting event with all the people throwing streamers and cheering and waving goodbye and all of that. It just seemed like such a big deal. And I, right through my childhood, right up to my teenage years, I remember sitting watching these boats coming to go, thinking one day I'll get out of here to go and see what's going on in the world. And I still haven't been. So, I mean, I have since been on a ship, but I just went sort of in a short trip around the islands. But in those days, it used to sail to London and places like that. So it used to that used to fascinate me, that you go across to London. And in those days, it was a big deal to leave Australia. It was considered not much here to sort of do anything that counted. You had to go overseas. And during my youth, Carnaby Street in London was the place, the mod place to be. So, a lot of things went on in the harbour. So that was sort of one of the things. I had my spots for sitting. Like when I was younger, I was up that tree. But when I was older, there were several spots that I used to sit. That I favoured spots. There was a spot down further, close to the water, where I used to sit and I would look straight out to Fort Denison, and that's where I'd be when I'd be watching the liners leave our shores.
Did you ever hear, when you were imagining you were in Africa, I met one man who from the rocks used to hear the lions roar at Taronga Zoo.
Ah! No, I never heard the lions roar. No. Most of the time when I was imagining I was in Africa, there was a cupboard that was it was a wardrobe, one of those wardrobes that has the mirror on the outside, and that's the only door that's on there, and it's got a big drawer at the bottom, and that was sitting on our landing, and I used to climb into that and close the door so it would be really black, and that's when I'd really be in Africa. But occasionally, like, you know, I mean, I just had this longing to be... I just used to dream about Africa. I don't know what it was. I think it was the wild animals, probably. I just imagined that, you know, they weren't going to eat me or bite me, that they knew that I was okay. So I just had this whole fantasy constructed around Africa. So, you know, I just sort of spend time either in the wardrobe or up the tree, and so Africa used to come into it a lot. It was just part of my fantasy world.
So tell me a little bit, it is a little bit different, the sense of you being an observer rather than seeing things from within the community. Mm. But did you feel at the same time, or did your mother, do you think, did the family feel that there was much sense of community here?
I think there was a large sense of community here, but I don't think we were a part of it. I think I am to an extent now, even though I'm still on the outside, but that's sort of by choice. I think the fact that we were on the outside has sort of played into where we wanted to be anyway, where we're comfortable being. I think my grandmother came from the country, so I think she had a whole different perspective to a lot of the people that were around here anyway. She did not participate in the community. Even in her old age, most people didn't know she was even in High Street with her husband when they moved there. They knew Bill was there, But they never knew she was even there because she never left the house. And he used to do all the messages, and if the doctor was required, he'd call. So
she didn't chat over the back fence type of thing?
She was always very polite to people who were in her immediate vicinity. No, she was not a chatterer over the back fence. She would, you know, be very pleasant and have a quick chat, but she was not one to stand there and shoot the breeze and for any length of time or exchange personal information. She had a distance.
What about the different religious traditions, Catholic and Protestant? Was there a sense of any kind of, tribalism, maybe even sectarianism?
Well, there was a problem in our family from that perspective because I was going to a Catholic school. My mother was Catholic. My mother was very dedicated Catholic. She'd been raised in an orphanage by nuns, had a very positive opinion and a reverence for nuns and the whole Catholic Church. So particularly when I was younger, she was very much involved with the church and she used to offer to clean the church up at St. Bridget's, and we'd be there and, you know, I'd go up with her and muck around on the organ while she'd be there cleaning. But the contrast to that was my grandmother, who was a Protestant and proud to be, and so she would... I remember one incident where she actually put the radio on and was listening to the Protestant church service, and I was in the lounge room at the time, and the radio was on in the kitchen, which was right next to it. It was not a closed off space, so I could hear everything that was being said, but I mean, I was oblivious to it, probably doing something else. I remember my mother came in an absolute state of anger and flicked this channel off and said, you know, how dare you have that on, to my grandmother. And I mean, they were very close, so. But religion just completely, my mother could not tolerate the fact that I would be exposed to anything else.
And yet, didn't your grandmother have the name O'Connor?
Mm.
And that sounds like an Irish Catholic name.
Her third husband was Catholic. So while Bill was Catholic and Mum was Catholic, Nana was very much Protestant. But she was not... She was not a regular churchgoer, but, you know, she had a faith in God and, you know, sort of basically believed similar things to what we did. It's just it came via the Church of England, not via Catholic. And so, you know, to Mum, if you weren't Catholic, you just weren't. You know, you weren't on the right track, so...
What about your father, then? Had he been a Protestant?
He was a Protestant, but part of the agreement of having a child baptised Catholic back then was that when he married Mum, he had to agree that all children would be raised as Catholic, and, you know, that was basically, he had to be schooled as into what was to take place if they were to be a couple. So, I mean, he just agreed to that because he just knew there'd be Buckley's chance. My mother was, had that Irish thing about her that you just don't cross up, you just don't. She was very vibrant and warm-hearted, loving person, but she had the temper of, ferocious temper, as did my father. But my father used to submit to her because she would just, you know, she just had a fury that just couldn't be matched if she got going.
So you already have this kind of ambiguity in your own family. Mm. And then out in the street, I suppose you would have been perceived, claimed as a Catholic in the community.
Well, yes, I was, because we used to go to Sunday church up at St. Bridget's every Sunday, never missed, around Christmas time. And, I mean, because of my schooling, I mean, I was totally indoctrinated into the Catholic faith. I mean, going to a Catholic school meant we were saying before school prayers, after school prayers, before morning tea, after morning tea, before lunch, after lunch, and then you'd have religious lessons as well as Friday benedictions and Stations of the Cross and... You know, it was, and before bed prayers, and, you know, then you've got the whole thing on the Sunday was completely dedicated to church going and, you know, making sure your clothes were ready and all that sort of thing. So it was very much a part of my every moment.
Did that ever translate into political attitudes? I know that most people, Dan Miller's point, were working class and labour, but there were also divides along political lines traditionally.
My grandmother was a faithful Labour supporter. I mean, she always championed the banner. You know, I mean, she was just, she had very strong opinions, came from the working class family. So in that context, that was my background, both sides. My mother was always Labor. My whole family has always been Labor. The area was Labor. Everything, I mean, that was a very united force. There was very few. I can't recall there being a liberal element in this area back when I was a girl.
Well, there would have been aspects within Labor moving on to communism, I suppose.
Well, it got a bit. I mean, you know, it got a bit sort of. The whole communist thing was considered very ugly, and no one wanted to be associated with that. You could be Labor and not considered communist at all. I think people got very scared of being termed communist, so there was a strong distinction drawn between Labor and anything to do with the communist or communist party. That's about all I could say about it, you know, other than...
Yeah, I'm just wondering, because so much of Miller's point is associated with the waterfront.
Mm.
So do you think as well the fact that your family didn't have connections with the waterfront as coal lumpers or as people who worked down there also set you apart? Or were there other families that didn't really have anything to do with the waterfront?
I really don't know. My closest friend, Vicky Bradford, her father was, he was in the Labor Party and he was Deputy Lord Mayor of Sydney. And I just, you know, he was a really strong force in our area, and there was always an accepted association with the water. I don't know that there was ever any different force. I mean, you know, my family was pro-union, pro-labour, you know, pro-the workers. So, I mean, that sort of created a common denominator that just didn't... There didn't seem to be any other sort of elements there that were not a part of that whole.
Mm.
If there were... I'm not aware of other families not being sort of tied in. I felt tied in. I mean... I didn't feel like we were as completely separate from the community. I always felt like we were a bit on the outside, but it wasn't a problem. It was sort of we accepted that because sort of to be a true Miller's Pointer, you had to be born here several generations earlier. I mean, and that was just a given. And it didn't mean that you were treated that differently. I mean, I don't think we were treated any differently. But I think because of the nature of my family, we kept on the outside. But we were still a part of it, even though we were on the outside. We were still in there.
And just, I'm jumping around here, but I'm just wondering, you grew up here as a child and your children have grown up here. How different has their experience been, would you say?
Oh, I think very different. I think my family were, everything was very black and white when I was a child. You were either a boy or you were a girl. You were Catholic or you were Protestant. You were black or you were white. And so everything was sort of, everything had its little place, and I rejected a lot of those segregations as I sort of got older, and I think the way I raised my children was very different to the way I was raised. I mean, I spent a lot of time raising myself because I was sort of, I didn't have anybody to sort of model myself on other than adults, and I was expected to really behave up to the standard of adults because I was around adults all the time. They wouldn't tolerate for very long any sort of childishness, so I learnt to really behave quite well, and I was a good kid anyway when I was little. So my mother tells me, she said I was a bit of a terror when I got to 14, but as a child I was very compliant, and I knew that in some sense my grandmother and Bill were doing some sort of favour by looking after me for Mum, and that's the sense that she gave me, that, you know, you must be good for them while I'm not here, because you know that I have to work to support us and I can't be here, so I really need you to be really good. And given that I was a fairly good child anyway, so I tried to always sort of maintain this goodness for my grandparents, despite the fact that I knew how to play the game a bit, so I could get a lot of freedom by appearing to be very good. But behind the scenes, I was doing basically whatever I liked as long as they didn't find out. So
I'm thinking, I suppose, in terms of the activities your kids would do now, and, you know, where they can play and...
No, that's right. I guess that's where I was leading that. Back in those days, I was left to my own devices and I was aware of that. So when I had my children, this street was a bit different because there were kids in this street while my children were growing up. So there was this really strong community just within this street. And it didn't seem to exist apart from this street. It didn't sort of dribble over into other streets. It was just this street. And particularly my daughter, when she was growing up, she had a best friend actually lived in this house when we lived in number 30. Melanie Wilde used to live here. And they were very close. And then there was another little girl, Vanessa, lived down the street, and then Rachel and Melissa, and later on Mara moved into this street and she had her two girls who my son played with. So there was always this sort of connection between the families and the children that played together, as well as the parents being really close friends, because Mara and Libby, who still both street, are two of my closest friends. And have been for a long while now. So Libby and I go back to high school days. But Mara, when she moved into the street, we've since become friends. So, you know, there was a community sense here that I did not have when I was around in Lower Ford Street. I didn't have that in my growing up years. There'd occasionally be a child come who'd move into a couple of doors down or whatever, and I'd maybe get to play with twice and they'd seem to just disappear or whatever. There was never a continuity of... or a glut of children. It was always adults around where I was. So it was a very different childhood, and I was a very introspective child and spent a lot of time in my own head, I suppose, as opposed to my kids were out there playing. You know, they were both very outgoing, always down the park, playing with the other kids, very different to each other. It was an interesting contrast between my daughter Jade and Melanie, because Melanie that lived here, she was very studious, had very creative parents, but she was a very dedicated academic child and always had her nose in a book, and she was shorter than my daughter and very pale-skinned, whereas my daughter was taller with the dark skin and was very outgoing and didn't want to read much. She'd rather be doing rather than reading. And so she'd be on skateboards and, you know, climbing on the jungle bars and all sorts of things. So she's a very active child. So they were a great contrast, these two. And you'd see them walking home from school and there's Melanie with the little glasses on, nose in the book, with Jade on a skateboard beside her. It was quite interesting, actually, to see them still maintain their differences while they'd spend time together. And so... And then my son was very active. He always wanted to be kicking the ball around. So he sort of claimed that park as his own at one stage because he was about the only boy in the street.
Is that Dawes Park?
No, that's the Klein Reserve, I think.
The little reserve. But do you feel there was enough space for them to play, that they didn't feel hemmed in?
My son actually hated living here because he didn't feel that there was enough for him. My daughter... adapted. She's just one of those people who she loved her childhood. She used to spend a lot of time with Melanie. They'd dress up. She had lots of activities to amuse herself. She loved acting out things, and you know, I'd get dresses and that I'd pick up or keep or buy from St. Vinny's or whatever, so that she could play dress ups. And you know, she had skateboards and I'd take her roller skates and ice skating, and, you know, she was a very active child and loved to do all things like that. Same with my son, but he didn't think that this area catered to boys very well. He always wanted a football field, and that was always a car drive away, which meant that it wasn't available to him readily. So he used to become very frustrated with this area.
Did he play in the Domain, or is that where he'd go?
No, he... I sent both my children to school outside the area, predominantly because the only school on offer was Fort Street. It didn't have a very good reputation with teaching kids by the time my children were of school age. It sort of crossed my mind briefly, but not for long, because I really wanted my children to have the same perspective I did, and that is that there's a whole world out there. It's not just Millers Point. And so... my daughter was sent to North Sydney Demonstration School over the bridge, and my son, who's 9 years, 9.5 years younger than my daughter, he went to Paddington Public School. I sent both my children to public schools, thinking that would, you know, because I was very anti-Catholic. I'd had enough of Catholicism by the time I was about 14 and 15, and, you know, vowed that I'd never put my children through what I went through, particularly in high school. But I, you know, that my opinion changed because they both went to Catholic high schools. So it was interesting because I think the public schools did not live up to the philosophy that they stated that they were based on, as opposed to the Catholic schools had changed. They weren't as
rigid
and awful as what my high school was. They were more along, especially Jade's high school she went to St. Vincent's at Potts Point, and she loved that school. I mean, it gave her everything that I could ever have hoped. And the reason I sent her there is I used to do driving instruction for a while, and I taught a few girls that went to school there, and I was so impressed with them. I thought they had beautiful deportment, they were worldly, they didn't look like they'd been sheltered, but they had this poise about them and a nice way of relating to people, and I thought, oh, that's what I want for my daughter, and that's what I got. You know, she just came out of there the way that I had always hoped, you know, and she had good values. There were a lot of really wealthy kids there, and it never bothered her that she didn't have that wealth. She used to see it as a positive that they don't get this. They don't know what the real world's like. You know, they're in their sort of insulated environments where they've got everything they need. And she felt like she'd had a more rounded education by the fact that she knew about their world, but they didn't understand about hers.
Well, I suppose, I mean, this area has always been considered working class.
Mm.
But it sounds as if you've become very middle class. How does that happen?
Well, I'm only middle class in my approach to things, I think. I think I've got a very open mind in that I think that you can attain anything if you work hard enough towards it and you make that your goal. That's a very different opinion than what my family had. In fact, I've got a lot of contact with my father in recent years, and he had the same complaint that, you know, they were very narrow in their thinking. They thought their lot in life was it. That was it. You don't aspire to beyond your station in life. And he found that very oppressive and humiliating, actually. He rejected that. So that's why he left.
Okay, so that's they meaning the family, not the community. Okay.
Yes, the family. And he found that a problem. I did myself as I was growing up. I thought that sort of whole of society's view, the religious view, everything was oppressive. I basically spent a lot of time breaking the bonds that had been placed on me by my family, and they were psychological bonds. So no one was saying to me, you can't do this, but that's basically the message that was coming through psychologically, was that, you know, no, you don't go beyond what you're set to do. And I actually believed that you couldn't do anything if you weren't born to it. I actually thought that you couldn't go to university unless you got perfect marks. I mean, that's how ignorant I was about things like university. I thought you couldn't learn to play the piano if you just weren't gifted. There were a lot of, I had actually been taught to play the piano, but I just couldn't quite get it. And I, you know, it's only looking back now I realise why I couldn't learn was that I didn't have the same teacher. I had different teachers. I became terrified of the teachers. I didn't understand what practice or study meant. No one had ever explained to me that that was different to reading. So out of my own ignorance, I had to sort of pull myself slowly out of that. And I just realised that I had a lot of options, and these options were something that I found for myself and discovered through my own growth. And it was never made clear to me by my family because they just didn't know it.
I'll just stop you there, Terry, because we're coming to the end of the tape. Tape ID MPSM5, end of side B. End of ID.